You're listening to Fake Believe, the podcast that gets some things right about conspiracies, cults, and cryptids.
Hi, welcome to Fake Believe. I'm Stacy, and I traveled all the way back to the 1950s just by asking my dad's friend his thought on transgender rights.
And I'm Rachel, and I learned from Odell Lake that you shouldn't be a hero and try to eat the otter if you are a trout. And Stacy's too young to understand what this means.
I am, but you had me at otter, so I'm okay.
I love otters. I love otters too. Who would have known?
I know. Gosh, we're the same. I was obsessed with otters, and then your mom told me that you also love otters, and I was like, what?
Yeah. Oh yeah. In Monterey Bay, I'd hang out for hours just looking at the otters. Yeah. Otters are my jam.
My boys. I am never doing that again. I'm very sorry. I've had a couple of sips of wine, so Mama's a little crazy tonight.
And Colin otters are boys. Otters too.
Well, I was specifically talking about the boys, but everyone's included when you say the boys.
Oh, okay, good.
I said I wasn't going to do it. I'm a liar. I said I wasn't going to do it again. I did it twice. But that's kind of like calling somebody dude, you know?
Yeah, our guys.
At this point. Yeah, guys. Mm-hmm. I had some friends in college that would start, instead of saying guys, they'd say ladies. Uh-huh. And then one time somebody was like, well, are you excluding so-and-so by saying ladies? And she's like, well, are they excluding me by saying guys? And then I was like, oh!
Well, it's so, like in French when it's, if you're talking about a bunch of people, it's il. If it's all women, it can be elle. But if it's 45 women and even one dude, then it's il. I'm like, why does the guy get to like taint the whole thing with his guyness? And I realize we do that with guys too. Like the word guys. Like we can go up and say to women or men, hey guys, but we can only say gals if it's all women.
Yeah. But we'll say ladies now.
I don't like that. I don't like ladies gals. I like women. That's it. In terms of language.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
It's one of your trigger words.
It's ladies.
I think that we should probably get into the episode now.
Okay. I agree. What are we talking about today, Stacy?
Oh, I'm going to introduce it. I wrote an intro this time, and you're going to be so impressed with me.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Yes. I'm already impressed with you. Impress me further.
I will. No. I planned ahead. Okay. So time to impress you further. Okay. Setting the scene. More than 150 vessels have vanished from here, claiming over 8,000 lives. It is known for sudden storms, towering waves, and unexplained lights in the sky. Compasses go haywire here, and to this day, modern communication methods have failed the souls on board the ships and planes that have disappeared without a trace. Despite all of these concerns, this roughly 500,000 square mile area of ocean remains one of the most popular destinations for tourists and is noted as one of the most heavily traveled areas. Known to some as the Devil's Triangle, today we are talking about the elusive Bermuda Triangle.
Ooh, clap, 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 clap. That was awesome. Yeah. Yeah, so the Bermuda Triangle. So I know you're going to give us like details about where it is and stuff, right?
Yeah, so I'll actually kind of bring that up right now because I don't go into it that much until the end.
Okay.
and there's a really good reason why. But just to kind of set the scene, it's around obviously Bermuda and, and Florida, the Bahamas, all of that area. So it's sometimes people have attributed tragedies with the Bermuda Triangle to past the bounds of the Bermuda Triangle, but this is generally where it is. So just think off the coast of Florida.
Got it. Okay. Set the stage.
Yeah. And then there's a bunch of ocean there.
Okay. So much ocean.
So much ocean. Like a ton of ocean.
It's an ocean of ocean.
So it's in the Atlantic.
Okay.
That helps. closer to like the United States.
Okay, awesome. Okay. Well, tell me about it.
Oh, I will.
Tell me about it, stud.
This is now a musical podcast.
Oh, you're giving me ideas. We're gonna have to do that someday. No, we have to. We have to. It's done. I'm writing it in my Google Drive.
Warm ups. Gross. Everyone's gonna just stop listening. Like the title of that episode will be "Skip This One." Okay. We're not necessarily going to go into the entire history of the Bermuda Triangle because it's the ocean. You know, it's been there for a while. So yeah. I already mentioned before, it's a place where a lot of planes and boats and just any kinds of vessels have just disappeared. Sometimes there are remnants of like of a shipwreck or something. Oftentimes you don't find human remains at the scene, which is very strange.
Isn't but that there's strange? There's a lot of scenes where I haven't found human remains.
I don't know what you're doing. Like, I can't walk down the street without seeing human remains.
Oh, I must be the weird one here.
Yeah. Let's be real. Okay, I'm saying in the context of a shipwreck, you know? You kind of expect to see dead people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
So what happened to the bodies on board? Like, you can find the plane, but you don't find the person flying it? What? Like, so there's even sometimes where you don't even find the wreckage. Since the Bermuda Triangle is a high traffic area, some claim that there's nothing special about the disappearances. There's a correlation between the amount of ships and planes traveling in that area and the amount of tragic accidents. So if you're going to have more people traveling there, you're bound to have more accidents. However, as we all know from school, correlation does not always equal causation.
False. Correlation is always equal to causation. I'm sorry. I'm making your editing harder.
Are you just saying that just to be funny, or is that really how it goes?
No, okay. That's not how it goes.
I was like, oh, shit. That doesn't make any sense to me now.
No, but conspiracy theorists will often, like, assume that correlation is causation.
That's true, but that's why I said does not always equal causation, because in this case, it doesn't. So just because there are a lot of people traveling there does not mean that the accidents are just that. That's why there's so many. There's another reason for why there's so many. So first we're going to go into some of the more naturally occurring theories for these tragedies before we start talking about the more plausible ones, you know? First one, kind of a bummer, human error. Unfortunately, the area of the Bermuda Triangle has very little landmass, and what land is visible sometimes looks similar. Sometimes people confuse one landmass for the other, and they end up getting lost, and then that's why they're never heard from again. Boring! Next. Water spouts and blue holes. Strange weather phenomena like water spouts or water tornadoes can come up seemingly out of nowhere. And this could explain why both planes and boats are victims, because it's a tornado, so it's affecting the plane, but it is also touching down under the water, and it's causing shipwrecks. Furthermore, the whirlpools that can be caused from a tornado going into the water could be made worse by what's known as blue holes. So think of them kind of like black holes.
Okay.
I thought you were going to laugh at that, and that's why immediately wanted to talk about black holes, because that's not as funny
as blue holes. Why is blue hole so funny? You're right. Okay.
Because we don't talk about it, you know? So it's like black holes, but for the ocean. So hence the blue.
That does make sense. You know, I was thinking about Smurfs.
I know you were. And that's why I wanted to make this very clear. On the seafloor, there are random deep pits that don't seem to lead anywhere. Sometimes water gets sucked into them and they form kind of like a whirlpool. And some theorize that these could be mass graves for missing vessels.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Like, that's why we don't find them, because they're all down in there.
In these blue holes.
In the blue holes, yes. But unlike water spouts, this theory doesn't explain why a large ship or an airplane would be affected. For one, planes are in the sky, obviously. And secondly, these blue holes are near land, and they would only be powerful enough to bring in small boats. not big vessels.
And there are big several vessels. Yes. That have, yes.
A lot of things have gone missing, and they wouldn't be sucked into these kinds of blue holes. They'd be able to navigate around it. But remember these blue holes, though, because there are other theories for the holes and their role in the disappearance of watercraft and aircraft.
Okay.
So next, we're going to talk about, for some reason, this is like the scariest natural phenomenon to me, and it's rogue waves.
Oh, yeah, because they come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. So for years, scientists believed that rogue waves were a myth, but in 1995, holla, the Doppler wave was discovered. And the Doppler wave was the first ever rogue wave recorded with instruments, which is my research's way of saying a lot of different instruments. I kept looking, and I was like, what did they use to find it? And they're like, instruments. And I'm like, what kind of instruments? And
like, you know, violins, flutes, yeah. Pianos, ukuleles, timpanis.
Gosh. Yeah. But basically, this was the Doppler wave was the first one that they discovered. And this wave reached at its peak about 80 feet high, which is about like stacking Shaquille O'Neal on top of 10 other Shaq clones. That's 11 Shaqs.
11 Shaqs high. That is really tall.
I know. I mean, if I were to look up at Shaq, I would be like, hi, you're really tall. And then like if there were like 10 Shaq clones and then they all just hopped on each other's shoulders.
Which clones do?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. But rogue waves are different from tsunamis because those are caused by earthquakes and they're only really noticeable when they hit the land. A rogue wave occurs when either a bunch of little waves come together to form a massive wave, or when two competing wave systems crash into each other perpendicularly.
Like, and this usually happens at sea.
Yes. I saw in some of my research, they said that at any given time, there could be up to like 10 rogue waves in the ocean.
That's like 10 too many.
Yeah, I'd have to say. Like, and just like picturing a giant wave coming up to me, like it, that's why this one's so freaky to me.
It's like 121 Shaquille O'Neals.
There's so many Shaquille O'Neals. but when they crash into each other, when this happens, the sea gives little time for humans to react, meaning they can show up suddenly and silently take out an entire ship.
The rogue waves can, not the humans.
Rogue waves will take out the
Although
ship.
Although humans can do that too.
They can, yes, but I'm talking specifically about rogue waves. And in the sense that a lot of people say whenever there are issues with the Bermuda Triangle, whenever there's disappearances, a lot of times if they radio in at all, they never show signs of distress. But then there are no radio waves or there's nobody calling in saying, oh my God, something's happening. So whatever happens has to be quick. So This could explain some of it. And scientists have theorized the highest a rogue wave could reach would be about 198 feet tall or half the size of the Pyramid of Giza. That being said, they haven't recorded any rogue waves that far over 100 feet. So theoretically, they could get up to almost 200 feet. But in real life, we haven't really seen anything over 100.
Or at least recorded it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's been recorded with the instruments.
Yes.
But this means that it could not reach high enough to take down an airplane. So again, this theory only holds truth for the boats.
Yeah.
So another theory that we're going to talk about here, which could go for both, and this is the last kind of the natural boring ones, but we've got air bombs and weather systems. So sounds super cool, but not really. As I've mentioned time and time again, the Bermuda Triangle is often affected by multiple weather systems colliding. So they're coming from all different angles, and this is why things are so crazy there. It's a lot like Missouri. We get all the weather systems, so that's why our weather changes so often. But we're on land, so it's better. when these systems collide, they cause crazy storms to pop up, and they make it difficult to navigate, and they'll sometimes even throw people off course. They'll send boats or planes where they're not supposed to be, and then people will get lost. And one particularly strange weather phenomenon includes hexagonal hurricanes.
What? This doesn't sound real.
It is. Bermuda Triangle seems to be the only place where clouds form straight edges as seen on weather maps.
Shut up. Wow.
Yeah. So, I've seen that, and like, it's not perfectly straight. It looks pretty straight, though, when you're looking at it from above, but obviously it's just, it kind of forms this hexagon. So the hexagon-shaped clouds are known as air bombs, which can cause savage gusts of wind that are as powerful as hurricanes. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's just a really strange weather phenomenon. Everything's kind of coming in at once, and it's forming this strange cloud, and it happens there often. And whenever you get caught in them, it's like, poof, like suddenly a big, huge gust of air, like hurricane levels, like mini hurricanes all the time in the Bermuda Triangle. So we can all agree now that the weather there is messed up, right?
For sure, yes.
Well, now it's time to talk about a little more about the plausible theories, starting with the possibility of a cursed sunken city.
Okay, yes, I love cursed cities.
Don't we all?
Yes.
Divers in the Bermuda Triangle have discovered different structures on the ocean floor. They appear to be almost like pieces of structures, but they don't show any signs of masonry. No, no relation, just
or they've covered it up.
Yeah. Furthermore, they seem to be on top of bedrock, meaning no structures could be underneath. So some have thought, oh, maybe the city had sunken in, and what we're seeing are the tops of these little buildings or something, and there's more underneath, but it's just bedrock, so you can't get under there.
That actually gives me chills, just the idea of if you're swimming below and then you see the top of a city. Oh, I want that to happen to me so bad.
That'd be so cool! The other part of this theory is that perhaps this isn't a structure at all, but a road. So they actually call this Bimini Road, because it's near Bimini Island.
Okay, Bimini Road.
Some people say that this is evidence of the lost city of Atlantis.
Oh, yes.
Those who know the legend may know that the residents of Atlantis had a power source that eventually led to their demise. The power they had corrupted them, sinking them to the bottom of the ocean. And theories state that whatever their source of power was sits on the seafloor and disrupts the ocean and air above. So that's how it can reach planes. That's how it can mess up.
So this thing that was so powerful that sank Atlantis is also so powerful that it can like reach up and grab planes.
Yes. So it's still fucking with things, essentially, is what I'm saying here.
Right.
I watched a video, and they had a beautiful illustration of like a staff with like a red stone on it that was glowing, and I was like, making it look all scary. Like, that's what's causing the anomalies. That's what's causing the storms. That's why things are so crazy, because this power source is just going haywire.
I'm in.
Yes. So that one sounds good. But how about this?
Hit me.
Remember those blue holes I mentioned earlier?
Of course. How could I forget?
Good. It was not that long ago, so I hope you didn't forget. They are quite possibly underwater tunnel systems that allow for various sea monsters to travel undetected, along with the constant threat of storms.
See, like Nessie, although she's freshwater.
You could let your imagination run wild when thinking about what kinds of creatures might be lurking below the surface, and whether or not they could launch themselves out of the air and take down an airplane.
Yes, they can. Yes, they can. My imagination says yes, they can.
Yes! I mean, just think of it. It's crazy, right?
Oh my gosh. Stacey, you say this is off the coast of Florida, right?
Some of it, yeah.
What if Jake the Alligator Man came from one of... Did you just gasp in Cockney?
I did. I had to.
What if he came from here, from a blue hole, and ended up in the, you know, in Florida marshes and wound his way south or west? This makes sense.
I thought he was also freshwater.
Well, I mean,
can alligators be in the ocean? I'm not saying that that's not plausible.
We need to get our biology degrees, is what I'm hearing.
Shit. Not another degree.
No, sorry. Sorry. We got to go back and get more.
Got to catch them all. So, yeah, I mean, that's a theory. However, I'm going to talk about one in particular.
Okay.
A giant octopus. Okay, stay with me.
Okay.
On Andros Island, there is a legend of a giant octopus named Luska.
Luska, okay.
Luska. So sometimes, if you're looking at Luska, you'll see pictures of a half shark, half octopus type of creature.
Okay, are we talking the front, the rib cage, and mouth of a shark?
It's like a shark, yeah, shark mouth. And octopus tentacles.
Gotcha. This makes sense. Yeah. Sure.
I mean, it'd be really stupid if it was the other way around. It's just a shark tail and then an octopus head. Like, those are the lamest parts of them.
How dare you? I love shark tails. I love octopi heads.
It's octopuses.
The plural of octopus is octopuses?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
I forget where it comes from, but the root word in that language, it would be octopuses, not octopi, which I'm so pissed because I'm like, when do I get to say that?
If you have eight pies, you can say this is...
That's an octopi.
Yeah.
I guess I'll take it.
Yeah. Well, you get pie. That's great.
You've convinced me. Thank you. So aside from the half shark, half octopus, Luska is often most simply described as a giant octopus that lurks near the Bahamas. It is true that large octopuses have been found, but none have been seen that are big enough to take down large cargo ships or snatch planes out of the sky.
Right.
Or at least no one has seen them and lived to tell the tale.
Right, because also cephalopods can camouflage themselves. So yes, this octopus could have come up and then just switched around to like look like the air, grabbed the plane, brought it down into the blue hole, and then swam over to hang out with Nessie in Scotland.
Yeah. It happens.
It's science.
It's science rules. But yeah, no, so they, that's already been a legend there. So that's why that one is popular. And like, also when you think of like the Kraken or other giant sea monsters like that, a lot of times you think of some kind of giant octopus. And I mean, where does that come from? Maybe they've actually seen it and everyone just thought they're crazy.
Right. Like they have to come from somewhere, right? These legends.
Yeah, so maybe there's just a giant octopus chilling out in this giant blue hole, and maybe when it gets out or goes back into the hole, it'll start causing the whirlpools and everything. We don't know for sure, okay?
It's as likely as anything else. Point is, we don't know. Nobody knows.
Exactly. Okay, but I'm about to drop my truth.
Okay.
This is the theory that I most believe. Like, this is the one that makes the most sense to me. All right? You ready?
Okay. I am ready.
Aliens are using a wormhole located in the Bermuda Triangle for interdimensional and intergalactic space travel.
For sure. This is absolutely the one that makes the most sense.
It really is. All right, yeah. So in order to help illustrate why this may be possible, or is possible, let me first tell you the story of Bruce Gernon, a pilot who often flew over the Bermuda Triangle for work. Bruce had his father and an associate on board who corroborated his story, which is as follows. In 1970, Bruce set off for his 90-minute flight from Andros Island to Miami. Remember, Andros Island is where Luska is from.
Thank you for reminding me, because I was like, why does that sound familiar?
No problem. I kind of glossed over that real quickly. But that's where we've heard this before in the story. During his voyage, Bruce noticed a strange cloud in his path. He tried to avoid it, but Bruce soon discovered that he would have to fly through it. While his aircraft was in the cloud, Bruce noticed a grayish-yellowish fog, what he calls electric fog, swirling around the plane. This cloud became more of a cylinder of flashing lights than a cloud.
Okay, sounds like a beam.
So it's like a vortex type of situation.
Okay.
It appeared as though he was seeing the same cloud formations over and over again, and he became a bit confused. Suddenly, Bruce noticed the other end of the cylinder becoming narrower, and he felt an urge to get out immediately. The plane finally burst through the other side of the cloud, and he called air traffic control to ask for his location, but they couldn't find him on the radar. However, air traffic control shortly reported to Bruce that he was entering Miami airspace. Bruce was gobsmacked as he looked at his watch to find that only 33 minutes had passed.
No. Oh my gosh. He's got to market this. Flying from there, all the way to Miami in 33 minutes?
Oh, I thought you meant the story. I was like, he did. He wrote a book. No. But yeah, getting from Andros Island to Miami in 33 minutes. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
So how could he have made it that far when it just was not physically possible? Aliens. Obviously.
Literally, the only thing that could make this make sense would be aliens.
Okay, so there are quite a few theories to how this happened. Like, perhaps he caught a tailwind, and that happened to shave an hour off his trip and in the correct path. Yeah, unlikely. Unlikely that he stayed on the same path and, you know, caught a wind and was just fine.
No. Not out. That one's out. Next.
Yeah. The more reasonable explanation is aliens. Clearly that Bruce had accidentally stumbled upon a wormhole used by aliens. Wormholes are still considered theoretical, but that's also because it might be difficult to believe that there is one on this planet that we don't know about or how to control.
I'm finding it easy to believe.
Right? I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
People quote Einstein's theory of relativity when discussing wormholes and how they can bend reality. When there's a burst of energy or when we experience warp speed, it looks like a spinning vortex. This is what would cause a wormhole like what Bruce had experienced. Furthermore, people have theorized that missing people and or ships have ended up in this other dimension or other part of the universe. And that's why we never found them.
It's science. Einstein says it's science.
Einstein. I mentioned Einstein. It's true. One final thing I'd like to mention with the alien theory is that the Bermuda Triangle goes from Bermuda to Miami to Puerto Rico. Do you remember what we talked about last week?
Aside from Jake the Alligator Man, we talked about El Chupacabra.
We did, and El Chupacabra was first discovered in Puerto Rico, and it was possibly an alien. Perhaps aliens were using the wormhole and the Bermuda Triangle as a means of travel, and one of their ships crashed into our planet. All I'm saying is that there's a lot of mysteries of this world, but a lot of them happen to intersect as well.
Right.
And that is the background on the Bermuda Triangle and what it could be.
Nice. And I think you just proved it, what it is. It is an alien wormhole from which creatures such as El Chupacabra and Jake the Alligator Man. Mm-hmm.
And Luska. Yeah.
I would imagine Luska and Jake would be friends, although Luska seems a lot bigger. A lot bigger.
Well, yeah, and it depends on which version of Luska, because, like, I mean, either it's the half shark, half octopus, or it's just a giant octopus. Like, the half part, you know, they might connect a little bit better. They'll be like, hey, I get it. I'm not one whole thing either.
Exactly. None of us is, right? We can be more than one thing. We're all Luska.
Seriously. Let's be more like Luska. One thing, though, I would disagree with taking down boats and planes and such.
Me too. A lot of lives have been lost.
Over 8,000.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be talking about something that's responsible for 306 of those 8,000.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I am straight up obsessed with this now.
Well, I'm going to talk about the USS Cyclops.
Okay.
The USS Cyclops is the first major disappearance in the Bermuda Triangle. So when it happened, people didn't think Bermuda Triangle, because it wasn't until later when things started happening and they were like, oh gosh, planes keep disappearing down here. And then they tracked it and they're like, oh. So this is where the first one since defining the Bermuda Triangle that it came up with.
Okay.
Okay. There were a lot of words there. I'm not sure if they were all in the right order.
I have my glass of wine. Everything makes sense to me.
Awesome. That's all you need. This was in 1918, but even over 100 years later, and with all the resources of the U.S. Navy, because the Cyclops was a Navy ship, and all our technical advances, there's still no answer as to what happened to this ship. And this is humongous, so it's not just a little boat or whatever. This would definitely take a huge octopus to take down.
From a big old blue hole.
Yes, the blue hole would have to be humongous. So here's the basics. The U.S. entered World War I in 1917, and the Navy commissioned the Cyclops in May of that year. The Cyclops was a coalier, not a warship. It was used to transport coal and other fuels. So what happened in this time, I'll just kind of explain, was there was the auxiliary navy and then the regular navy. And the auxiliary navy was kind of like what I imagine like the reserves, but it was basically mostly civilians who would man these ships. And so they weren't involved in the war aspect of it. It was more just the transport of fuels and goods and stuff. This was run by the auxiliary navy, so not the navy proper. On February 20th of 1918, the USS Cyclops was docked in Bahia, Brazil, and it loaded up with manganese ore. On February 22nd, 2 days later, it left for what was supposed to be a direct route to Baltimore, which should have taken about 3 weeks. However, on March 3rd, the Cyclops randomly showed up in Barbados. It left from this unscheduled stop on March 4th and was never seen or heard from again. With 306 passengers and crew, it remains the Navy's single largest loss of life outside of combat.
Whoa. They weren't supposed to be in Barbados, but they just like showed up and everyone was alive. Everyone was cool.
Everyone was cool. I mean, people in Barbados were like, what the fuck are you doing here?
Were they like, what the fuck are we doing here?
I will get into that a little bit. Okay. It is significant. But yeah, they weren't supposed to be there. It turns out that the story of this ship is nuts, even without the whole Bermuda Triangle part of it. So every time I researched something, another question would pop up. And these questions ranged from, what are these mysterious manganese deposits on the ocean floor? To, why did the USS Cyclops make an unscheduled stop in Barbados? And, most intriguing, who is George Worley?
I can't answer that, so I hope you can.
I mean, I can kind of answer it. It's still a mystery. But all the accounts I've read put Lieutenant Commander George W. Worley in the center of this mystery. Naval Officer Conrad Nervig, who had the good fortune of being transferred off the ship in Brazil, had this to say about Worley. He was a, quote, gruff, eccentric salt of the old school, given to carrying a cane, but possessing few other cultural attainments. He was a very indifferent seaman and a poor, overly cautious navigator. Unfriendly and taciturn, he was generally disliked by both his officers and men. So what we have here is we have an indifferent seaman.
I hate that.
You hate an indifferent seaman?
I hate indifferent seamen.
I prefer enthusiastic seamen myself.
Exactly. If there's one thing I hate.
So, but that's what George Worley was. And his only cultural attainment was a cane.
Like as a fashion statement, or like he really needed it to walk?
I mean, they or didn't both. Really get into that. Probably yeah, both.
I was going to say, like, when people wear glasses, sometimes it's like, you actually need it, but, like, it's cool.
Exactly. So, with him, who knows? But to be that only thing that you've attained from culture, like, is this cane, like, nothing else?
I mean, listen, I've seen some men that are like, see, I'm cultured. Here's my one defining feature.
It's my monocle. It's my ironic mustache.
I carry a pocket watch. It doesn't actually tell time because I don't know how to use it and I can't read an analog clock, but...
But it's my cultural attainment.
I'm cultural.
So I was so curious about Worley that I read a whole ass book about him.
A whole book?
A whole book. I will tell you, it was a lot of skimming. I'm not going to necessarily recommend this book, but I will tell you what it was. It's called A Passage to Oblivion, and it was written by Gian Quasar. I don't want to put the book down. I will just say that it was well written, but it needed an editor. He was kind of all over the place. It was a whole lot. And so I was just kind of like going through and then pausing where I needed to. But anyways, what he did do is agree with me that, quote, it always comes down to George Worley, end quote.
Okay.
The first red flag about George Worley is that George Worley isn't even his real name. Yeah.
What an imposter. I bet he doesn't need the cane. No, now that I know that, he's a poser.
Poser. Total poser. His given name was Johann Friedrich Wieckmann, and he wasn't, I know, Johann. And he wasn't Johann Friedrich Wieckmann with a W. Wieckmann. I just realized how close that is to your last name.
I know. Stacey. And the Johann from the Illuminati episode, and then it sounds like the German version of my last name. I'm freaked.
I'm surprised that I didn't realize. It probably is.
Once you say it out loud, but how's it spelled?
Wieckmann. What is your last name from? I know how to spell it, but what is it from again? It's not German.
Is it German?
It's yes. German.
Wieckmann.
You got a lot of German in you. Both your parents.
I am like only German, pretty much.
That is crazy that you are probably related to him, which means that I am probably related to him since we're the same people. But so Johann Friedrich Wieckmann. Oh, this is crazy. I cannot believe that I didn't notice this. But he wasn't an Englishman, like the surname Worley suggests. He was born in Sandstadt, Germany in 1865.
Real quick, does this 1865 exactly 100 years before my dad was born? Well, depending on the day, but yeah. I just love
I don't have the date he was born.
It's okay. I love making connections anyway. But did he change his name because it was World War II and he didn't want to sound German?
It was World War One.
Oh, World War One, sorry.
So that is a good point. And still we were opposed to Germany in World War One as well. But no, he changed his name before the start of the World War.
Okay.
It's a thing. Mm-hmm. So he was born in Germany in 1865, and he wasn't really much of a sailor. He was a cabin boy, but as a cabin boy at 15, he jumped off a German ship that was sailing off the east coast of the United States and swam to New York.
What?
Yeah, he just jumped off. He's like, I'm going. And he swam to New York, and from there he crossed the nation where he ended up in San Francisco. So he did like a duathlon to get to San Francisco. And there, instead of actually becoming a captain, Wieckmann eventually opened a tavern and he named it Captain Wieckmann's Roadhouse. So,
okay.
But he wasn't really a captain, but that's why he named his tavern.
He's manifesting, okay? He made a vision board and he was like, secret. This is going to happen.
Yeah. So on his vision board, he had ways to steal money from his customers and to rig the gambling and the betting and to basically be a jerk. People didn't like him even as a tavern owner. There's also this theory that he didn't only steal money, but he stole a whole identity. So this is not corroborated. This is kind of speculation from the book that I read. But he was like, the author was like, maybe the OG George Worley was a captain who partied a little too hard at the Roadhouse. And then when the real Worley died, Wieckmann saw his chance and he stole these captain's papers and stole his name and his identity.
Oh, and he was overly cautious because he knew that he was a fraud.
Yeah, probably. Oh, gosh. Like, there was too much for me to include. But, like, the stories of the things that he did, man, what a weird sailor. So we're not sure exactly why, but we do know that by 1897, Wieckmann had become Captain Worley.
Okay.
And we also know that there are no records of him as Wieckmann doing much beyond taking a few night classes in sailing. So before he became Worley, not a lot showing that he knew how to sail. But the new Captain Worley, was now certified to become a member of the Navy Auxiliary because he was a captain. So that's what he did. So, in fact, the Navy didn't even realize that Worley wasn't who he said he was until about a year before he died. So this would be about 20 years later when they investigated him for a board of inquiry that was launched into his conduct on the USS Cyclops. But they couldn't even prove that he was a naturalized citizen because of bad timing. The great earthquake in 1906 and its subsequent fires had destroyed the records in San Francisco.
Stop. He's either the luckiest or the most unlucky person.
Yeah. Either way, there's a lot of coincidences with this Worley character. So the Navy was just like, shrug, we'll never know. Oh, well, have a ship. So the Board of Inquiry.
I'm calling it now. He's an alien.
Shut up.
He's an alien. And that's why everything's happening. He's able to manipulate things. He just went home through the wormhole.
Let us see if this theory pans out, shall we?
Yes. Yes, I'm on board. I can't wait. Woo!
So the Board of Inquiry happened about 7 months before what would be the Cyclops' last assignment. 40 of Worley's crew had signed a petition alleging that Worley was drunk all the time, he was foul-mouthed, and unfit for command.
That's me.
Well, you're not commanding a ship, a Navy ship. Or are you?
I was going to say, I am unfitting to command a Navy ship.
I mean, it looks like you're in a laundry room, but it could be that you're on a Navy ship.
I mean, I can command a sea ray, but not a Navy ship.
You've never tried. You don't know. You can do it.
Listen, I don't have straight white boy confidence. I don't. I don't think I could just hop into any situation and be whatever I want. I have imposter syndrome and something I have a master's degree in, okay?
So I have some quotes from this inquiry. So it's a board of inquiry, like basically like a trial. So this is from Quartermaster Langren, who recounted a run-in with Worley to the commander of the inquiry. I'm going to do his voice.
I approached Captain Worley, sir, about the mess. The fish we had for dinner had not even been cleaned and smelled bad. Captain Worley was lying on his bed. He got up and put on his trousers.
So apparently...
Was this guy passing a kidney stone?
Okay, listen. Listen. I majored in theater.
You're doing great.
Thank you. So apparently this pissed Captain Worley off. And so Captain Worley said,
"The whole goddamn lot of yous are only a lot of goddamn sons of bitches."
I think I am a descendant of
his. I went a little high-pitched with him, but... So that's what he said. So then Langren then testified,
"I told him I resented being called by a name which no man born of a woman could stand. Captain Worley insisted he had never called me nor any man aboard ever a son of a bitch."
And then Langren said he asked for an apology. The commander of the inquiry asked how that went, and Langren said,
"Worley then called me a son of a bitch and confined me for 2 days."
I love him and I hate him.
Good. You should. Ambivalence is what you should feel for Captain Worley.
Okay, great.
He did sound hilarious, but also really not a good guy. It's beyond calling his men's name, beyond calling his men names, stories of Worley abound. Apparently, he walked around in his long johns, a top hat, and a cane. Even when the dress code specified navy whites.
That's a look.
And I guess this is actually a really big deal, too, to go against dress code like that, especially as the captain. He also chased his crew with a pistol. He was his own mixologist and the creator of a cocktail that he named Deep Sea Punch.
Do you have the recipe?
I don't. I couldn't find it. I know. That's exactly what Tiffany asked me. I don't.
Okay, we'll make it up, and then we'll say that we invented it.
Yeah.
Just like him.
We could probably figure it out based on what was available. He was also linked to at least 4 suspicious deaths. I'm telling you, like, we could have a whole episode on him alone, so I can't get into these deaths, but there were at least 4 that came up. He also had an unauthorized signal light, which could have been used to give away their position to bad guys, which is why you had to authorize your signal lights. And so we had one. And of course, not only was he actually German, but apparently he was not so secretly pro-German, which wasn't a great attitude to have in World War One.
Exactly.
Or World War Two.
Exactly.
Right. It was more okay in World War One because it wasn't so much like a human rights issue in World War One. It was more like a politics thing. And so people were definitely more okay with people in general having pro-German views in World War One than in World War Two, but not their commander, like not – or their captain, mm-hmm. even if he was auxiliary navy. So this inquiry, which was, again, 7 months before the disappearance of the Cyclops, ended with really nothing. He was cleared of all charges that were brought against him. And then between them and the Cyclops' final voyage, virtually nothing changed. It was the same crew and it was the same old/new Worley. All of this points to the main theories of what happened to the ship and crew in March of 1918. So some people suggest that Worley was a traitor and he had given up the ship to the Germans. Others suggest that there was mutiny that ended in total destruction. But there are no records anywhere of German activity in the area, even through this huge investigation. And I'm sure by now Angela Merkel would tell us if, like, she had found something and, like, confess to solve this problem. I trust her in that way.
I trust her, too.
Yeah, she's great. And as far as mutiny, this is definitely a possibility because he was hated by a lot of his men. But it doesn't explain why there's no trace of the ship left. I mean, it was the size of a football field, and it had tons of furniture and supplies with the mark of the Cyclops on it, and nothing, like not a stick has come from this humongous ship. The size of a football field. I don't even know how many Shaquille O'Neals that is.
That's so many Shaquille O'Neals. Shaq and Shaq clones.
Yeah, so many clones. So many clones.
Clones so, everywhere.
I think, Stacy, that the answer here is clear, and you obviously feel the same way, because here's what I arrived at, is that Worley did give up the ship to the enemy, but the enemy wasn't Germany. The enemy was aliens.
I knew it! Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, yeah.
And just to be clear, I had no idea this was coming, and she had no idea that I was going to say that aliens were the most plausible theory and have me bring up everything about aliens. So
yeah, no, this is coincidence. And when she said that, I didn't say anything, but I was like mouthing to her over the video, like, yeah, that's a secret. Okay, so here's the first. I'll tell you about evidence that Worley had no intention of getting the USS Cyclops back to the States in general.
Okay.
This is what people who think that he did the whole Germany thing, this is what they talk about.
Okay.
So there were rumors that he had executed a crewman at sea prior to finding port in Brazil. This is, of course, super duper illegal.
Is it?
It is. Even for a swashbuckling auxiliary Navy man with a cane like Worley. It's not something that he would do if he knew that he'd face consequences, including the death penalty upon returning to the United States. So maybe he did that knowing that he was never going to go back. Next, he sold his house before his last mission. He lived in Norfolk, Virginia, and he told his wife that he was going to retire, that they're moving back to San Francisco. But then his daughter got sick, his little baby. And she got so sick that they thought it was scarlet fever. And his wife was like, just don't go on this last trip. Just retire now and stay home. But he insisted. And he didn't even take her to the hospital because then he would have to go into quarantine and miss this trip. But if he was going to retire anyways, what difference does it make if he went into quarantine and missed the trip? Why not just be like, okay. But instead, he basically like gambled with his own daughter's life to make sure that he could go to this trip, which was just a refueling mission. All it was picking up this manganese ore and bringing it. So, I mean,
talk about a family man. Jesus. My daughter might be dying, but I'm going to sell my house and go on this very unimportant mission. And right. I'm going to retire in 3 weeks anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah. The big one is, of course, the unexplained and unscheduled stop to Barbados.
Okay.
So he claimed that he had stopped because the ship was overloaded, and so it was raising the waterline past, like, the limit, and that meant to him that it was overloaded. But investigations found this to be unequivocally false. What's more, he loaded it with tons of extra coal. So he also added more fuel to the ship.
So he added more to it, but it wasn't overloaded.
So he said it's overloaded, and that's why he stopped. Mm-hmm. And then, but then investigations were like, no, like this, we have a lot of records of this being perfectly loaded and within the limits and all of this stuff. And then at the same time, he got more coal
while he was there. Barbados.
Yes, while he was in Barbados. He was like, okay. Give us more coal.
Okay.
Give us more supplies.
Okay.
So remember that the Cyclops was carrying manganese ore, mm-hmm. but itself ran on coal. But he had more than enough coal to make it from Barbados to Baltimore without having to refuel, even if he went hundreds of miles off course, which, by the way, he was known to do. Why would he add more weight to a ship that he claimed was overloaded, and why would he need extra coal unless he was planning on going much further than Maryland?
Because he's an alien?
or going to Germany or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not going home.
Yeah.
But finally, the last thing about this is that he didn't fly the homeward bound pennant upon leaving Barbados. So, like, I guess it's a Navy thing. And that might not seem like a big deal, but it is. Because, you know, Navy.
There's...
Or Air Force, you know.
Everything. I mean, every branch of the military, like, there's a reason why it's so structured and why, mm-hmm. you know, there's traditions and everything. You have to know who's an imposter and you have to know who's friendly. Otherwise, you know, you could be easily infiltrated and not even know. And it's just, that's just part of it. So if you were an alien that came in and stole somebody's identity and then, you know, didn't know all these things...
That you weren't supposed to walk around in your long johns and bowler hat and cane when exactly. It clearly said, wear your navy white.
Yes. This mm-hmm. is all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It just makes too much sense.
It does. Don't you hate that? So there's plenty to indicate that Worley wasn't ever planning on returning to Maryland. So, of course, this pro-German gave up his ship to the Germans. But... beyond there being no hint of proof for that, there's also the significant detail that there was no SOS. Since the invention of wireless communication in 1901, no U.S. Navy ship has ever been lost that has not gotten off some message.
Okay.
So if a bunch of bad guys were boarding a ship to meet up with a treasonous captain that was hated by at least half his crew, much more likely... you can bet your sweet ass that somebody would have sent at least something to the Navy. Somebody would have gotten there and sent a message. It's the only time that it hasn't with the Navy. So no human would have been able to keep Navy men from sending a message to shore.
Correct. No human.
No human. So there's also a matter of the cargo, the manganese ore. This was not the Cyclops' usual cargo, which was cool. And perhaps this is why it was so important for Worley to go on this particular mission. It's because the aliens needed the ore.
Oh, I don't know if I'm asking a big question, but what, like, kind of properties?
Well, let's talk about manganese. So, not only is it useful for creating weapons, which is what the Navy ostensibly wanted it for, but it's a mineral that all known living organisms in our universe need to survive because it detoxifies free radicals in oxygen. So we all need oxygen, but then because we need it, we need other we really only need trace amounts, but we need it. If we didn't have manganese, we would die, as would all complex organisms in our world, in our universe.
Okay. Yeah.
So across the ocean floor, there are these manganese nodules, which are sometimes referred to as alien balls, because nobody knows where they came from.
Okay.
This is all real. They were first discovered in 1873, which is about 8 years after Worley arrived on the planet – I mean, was born.
Oh.
So the thing is, even now, scientists don't know where these nodules come from. It's a total mystery. They have a lot of theories, but nothing can be proved. And to make things weirder, they discovered a huge patch of these nodules in the Atlantic. So they are all over there, and they're in all the oceans. But they discovered this huge patch in the Atlantic that's larger than any other patch in the Atlantic.
Really quick, are do these nodules happen to have, like, tubing coming off of them?
No, they're like, okay. Well, okay, so mostly they're like balls, like just little balls. But actually here in the Atlantic, they're kind of flatter, so they look kind of like cow patties.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to bring up something later then.
Okay.
That I thought you were getting into. And I thought I had written down in my notes, but I think I cut out for time. But
okay. So these ones in the Atlantic, they found this huge patch that was like way more than anywhere else in the Atlantic. And guess where this was?
I'm going to say Bermuda Triangle.
No, but it was just east of Barbados.
Okay. So
which is not quite in the Bermuda Triangle. It's a little – yes.
Stop there, and they get their fuel, and then they get their –
So,
okay, I am really good at puzzles. I'm putting these pieces together.
Right. So because Stacy remembers, and I hope the rest of you do, that Barbados is where Worley made his unscheduled stop. Uh-huh. So you might be surprised to learn that I'm not a scientist, but you know, don't have a heart attack. But here's what I have learned about some science stuff this week. Okay, this is really cool. So in our universe, oxygen is the third most common element, which explains why all complex organisms are dependent on it. It's there. So we're oxygen-based. However, there are bacteria that can breathe other elements and compounds, including manganese. So we do already know about some life forms that rely on manganese instead of oxygen. They do exist, even in our universe. They're just bacteria, so they're simple organisms. But there's also a phenomenon called desert varnish, which is this layer of manganese and other minerals that forms in the desert, but nobody knows how. One honest-to-goodness scientist, Professor Carol Cleland, says, "On Earth, we may be co-inhabiting with microbial life forms that have a complete different biochemistry from the one shared by life as we currently know it." So basically, there's a whole other world on our world, and it's kind of connected to manganese. This whole other world has a really cool name. It's called the Shadow Biosphere.
I want to live there.
I know. I love scientists who came up with that name.
I know. They knocked that one out of the park.
They did. Good job, scientists.
They probably also had theater majors.
They did, I'm sure. So this all goes to show that manganese could possibly be an important element for alien life to traverse our oxygen-obsessed universe.
So like how we would go on other planets or even into the sea with oxygen.
Yes, they would kind of do the same thing with manganese.
Okay.
So in Barbados, Worley got enough coal, the extra coal, to get his ship through the wormhole through a wormhole and probably like, I don't know how, I'm not sure how this science would work, but enough for like in the oxygen area for his ship to go through places. And it was laden with enough manganese for getting him like out of the universe, like itself. So, you know. That sort of thing. I'm guessing that the large patch of the manganese nodules that were found at the bottom of the Atlantic is a byproduct of getting the Cyclops through the wormhole.
Okay.
So the naval officer Conrad Nervig, who's that guy who got off in Brazil, he wrote that Worley, quote, was a perfect example of the tyrannical bucko sailing ship captains who considered their crew not as human beings, but only as a means of getting their vessels to the next port. So I'm thinking that maybe the truth is that Worley considered his crew as merely human beings, and therefore only means of getting his vessel to the next portal.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so today I have proven that Captain Worley was a space alien who abducted the USS Cyclops in order to get back home through the wormhole in the Bermuda Triangle. Thank you.
I mean, you proved it. I have nothing else to say in defense of anything else. I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense to me. That's the only thing that works. But so to kind of add to your argument there, there were treasure hunters in the Bermuda Triangle, and they ended up finding a map of shipwrecks in the Bermuda Triangle. So, like, that was really cool. Except one of them was marked as a USO, which means unidentified sunken object. And they were like, what? And obviously, like, this is, it's not a natural occurring thing that they found in the ocean. They found it on the map. They went to that location and they found it. And they were like, not only is this not natural, this is not man-made. Like, this was like something that they had no idea what it was, what it could be. So at first it just looked like there was this one USO. There were five of them and they were not nearby. And they had protrusions going in five different directions, kind of like five different, I apologize. It wasn't five more nearby. There were three more nearby. And then they had the five protrusions that were coming out of the top and around it. And they were going in all of these different directions. And they're like, what is this? Where did it come from? What is its purpose? It was just a completely new object that was found. One might say alien object. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean.
And this was in the Bermuda Triangle?
It was in it, yep. I didn't see exactly where it was. Like I said, I put it in my notes, but I didn't put it in my script. But it was another one of those videos, and they had the graphics and everything. And so they like, drew a picture of it. I wasn't able to find it, but also the person in the video made it a point to say, like, I can't explain this, but there hasn't really been any other scientific research or anything on it. So not a lot of people have discussed it, but maybe they have, and it's just hush hush.
Because you don't want to scare the masses.
Exactly. But I mean, like, that's cool though, too. I mean, I don't know if these manganese, like, deposits, nodules and all that, maybe that was somewhere nearby those too. That's why my chupacabra theory, that's why I said maybe something crashed. And maybe that was like remnants of the ship or something. Or maybe it was like his escape pod or something. Who knows? Yes.
And this could also apply to Jake the Alligator Man.
It really could. I mean, this opens up a lot of theories. Again, this is why this is something that we're doing early on, because we want people to know that a lot of things are connected. You know,
everything's connected.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, oh, is it just a coincidence or is it all connected? Sometimes things are coincidences, but sometimes you have to know.
To be a true fake believer, you have to believe that there is no such thing as coincidence.
Exactly. And that's just what I'm saying here. I mean, we've got, I think, solid evidence that there are aliens coming from the Bermuda Triangle. One thing, though, I'm going to make this very clear. I want everybody to know, even though we are talking about alien presence and how they have manipulated our history and everything, Rachel and I are taking this stance now. We are not saying that aliens built the pyramids or did anything that other civilizations had done that just white people hadn't figured out yet, okay?
Right.
It's very clear. We are not taking away culture or heritage from any races, ethnicities, any groups of people, any nationalities. None of that is being taken away. All we're saying is that aliens are around.
Right. Well, I will kind of happily take some away from white people. I don't know. They deserve it.
Oh, yeah.
The Louvre built by aliens. Sure. I'll give them the Louvre.
That's fine. No, it's just like, it's such bullshit that it's like, oh, well, we didn't think of it, so it must be aliens.
It must be aliens. I know.
Yeah, no, I know. We're not about that. I mean, you know, aliens didn't build the pyramids, but they are visiting us through a wormhole, possibly a chupacabra. Maybe a chupacabra is a pet of an alien. Who knows? I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet. I mean, if the government and the powers that be would allow me to learn more and would put this on Google, I would know.
Yeah. Yeah. You hear that? Government? PTB?
Yeah.
Come on.
Government. They, you know? They. But, I mean, this has been a fun episode. There was a lot in here. And honestly, we could do a part two if we needed to do that.
I feel like you could have an entire podcast on the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, yeah.
That's not even, like, what I talked about isn't even all of the mystery of this, of the USS Cyclops.
Right. I mean, there's still so much that we could talk about with this. So just kind of keep that in mind moving forward, that there's going to be possibly other callbacks to the Bermuda Triangle. We just kind of wanted to fill you in on a couple of the strange things that have happened. But ultimately, you just got to remember that this is all 100% real.
And 100%
fake believe.
This episode was brought to you in part by Deep Sea Punch. For this and more recipes, find us on social media at Fake Believe Podcast or visit our website at fakebelievepodcast.com. Also, don't forget you can always rate, review, and subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.